Now we come to the good part of the program. I feel very privileged this morning to have our speaker that is speaking for us. I asked Virginia what I should say, and she said the less I said, the less I'd have to take back later. So. But Virginia is not a person, usually maybe you've had dinner with them or something, but I've known Virginia. I've seen her program work in her life for many years because we don't live that far apart. But I'm not going to take any more of her time. Help me give a good Fellowship by the Sea welcome to Virginia M.
Good morning. My name is Virginia. I'm a member of the Al-Anon family groups. And the meeting was delayed because five of us were in the elevator. We don't know where. But, I mean, you don't know where you are when you're in there and the doors won't open. You don't know whether you're between floors or at a floor or what. But we had a good time. What's that? You're giving lemons, make lemonade. Well, we made lemonade. Oops, there's Buck. Well, anyhow, I will comment on something you said, Ann. When we get through with the readings and a chairman says, now for the best part, what's wrong with what's conference approved? That's the best part. You don't know what I'm going to say. And that you can live with, and that you will find any place you want to find it. Any group you go to, you will hear it. And the repetition of good things becomes a part of us, whether we want it to or not. And so the good part isn't what follows the opening, if I may dare say so. Oh, dear. I am grateful beyond words to see so many faces out there that I know and who have shared with me, have encouraged me. Offered love instead of scorn, acceptance rather than rejection. Many happy hours together. My friend Minnie over here. Oh, we go back a long way. But anyhow, moving on, I was born, I guess you didn't know that, but I was born on the eastern shore of Maryland, and when I was growing up, they called it the liquor-drinking, duck-hunting country, and I knew a lot of people that today I think they were alcoholic, and I don't know that they were, but when I meet people like them, I suggest they check AA, and the depression, and I know some of you are here old enough to remember the big depression came along, and my family was wiped out. And my two brothers and my sister and I went to live with our maternal grandparents in western Pennsylvania. And it was a vast difference, that home was, because we ate on time and there was no drinking and there was no carousing and all. When we were down on the shore, we used to swim out and get people that were drunk out of boats because they couldn't understand why the boat went in a circle when they were rowing with just one oar, you know. But my grandparents were staunch Presbyterians, and you ate on time, and you went to church, and they were good people. And it wasn't until I got older that I recognized what an awesome thing they did by taking in those four children at their age. I'm now past that age, and now I know how loving and accepting and responsible they were to do that. And they died within 11 months of one another when I was 11. And I became a ward of the Orphans Court of the state of Pennsylvania. And your legal status in those days, I don't know if it's changed or not, no matter what your age were, you were the same as a babe in arms until you were 21. So you had no voice in anything. And it was very bad. No one cared to check to see if you were fed or clothed or housed. And the Orphans Court awarded you the whole sum of $1 a day. February, you got $28, and you know. And even then, it was difficult to live on $1 a day. And enough of the pity. You don't have to feel sorry for me. I have served myself so much self-pity, I'd never need another drop as long as I live. So I'm just telling you so you will know some of my background. because I think what motivates us to do the things we do that resulted in us being here have some roots in what we experienced as we were growing up. And I think that people that grew up in lovely, healthy, responsible families must have a greater sense of guilt than people like I who came from a screwed up bunch, you know. And I feel sorry for them. But there's more for us to be grateful for than it is for you. And I guess that's why you have to strive so for gratitude. But at any rate, Buck said, if I forgot where I was, just start over. My name's Virginia. let's see. When I finished eighth grade, I was as tall as I am now, and I didn't fit in. I didn't live with people with the same name. I was never allowed to visit overnight anyone or have anyone visit overnight, and I felt like an oddball. And I hear alcoholics talk about being misfits and not fitting in. You don't have the corner on the market for that. Most of us live with you drunks as long as we do because we don't fit. It isn't because you're so wonderful. I hate. And lots of time, we have too much money and time invested to give it up. Because I knew if I left in, he'd have another one coming in the back door, and I'll be damned she was going to get what I'd work for, you know. But we stay for a lot of reasons, many reasons. We stay because we hope. We stay because we love. We stay because we have no place else to go. We stay because there's no gas in the car. We stay because we don't have any money. And we stay because if you got sober after we left, they say, I told you it was her fault. So we stay and we get sicker and sicker and sicker without the benefit of being able to blame it on beverage alcohol that we ourselves have ingested. We stay because we get squirrely, because sick people are with sick people. Lois, the co-founder of the Al-Anon Family Group, said, we in Al-Anon must live by the same 12 steps because we have the same defects of character. They're just evidenced in a different way. And I think that's true. Because to me, the motivation behind these things that in our lives, just like this program allows us to be motivated by the positive. I forgot where I was. My name's Virginia. And, I did forget where I was. Oh, well. Y'all have lost days. I've just lost my mind. I mean, I left Pennsylvania because I wanted to get away. When I first heard alcoholics speak about geographical cures, it came to me that's what I tried to do when I left Pennsylvania, because I equated unhappiness and sorrow and all of that with Pennsylvania, and so I wanted to leave there, and I left, and I went to Southern California, which is as far away as I could go in those days, because it was World War II time. Oh, my. Now you know how old I am. I'm 81, so forget it. And I was doing a considerable amount of drinking when I was there. And I was what the crowd did, I did, because I wanted to fit in. I wanted to belong. I wanted to be accepted. I didn't approve of them, and I didn't approve of me. But I wouldn't think about it. You know, you're not nothing in yourself. You have to be with people that have something so that you can lean on it and be a part of it. The time came and I returned east and to be with a sister who was expecting a child. And after her baby was born, I came to North Carolina. And thereafter, I met the man to whom I am still married. Now, we speak a lot about miracles in the program, and they're not always necessarily well defined other than to say he's not drinking. He's sober. She's sober. Or she's not raising hell anymore. Or he's not locking her out anymore. Yes, those are miracles. But another miracle is Buck and I are still married after 59 years. Because the things we did to one another, and the things we did to ourselves, that shouldn't be so. We should be in an insane asylum, and if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd be in jail for murder, but that's another story. So Buck and I were married. I had a very strong reverse snobbery that people with money or position or education were shallow and vain, because that's what I had seen in the adults around me as I was growing up. And so I suffered from this reverse snobbery. And I was not interested in a fine house on the hill and all of that, because I knew those things didn't. I didn't know it in so many words, but I knew it in here, that those things did not bring you happiness, that happiness came from another source. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that it did. Buck and I were married, and he has been good for me in spite of the years. In spite of the years, he has been good for me. And I love him more now today than I ever have. And it's all right to love an alcoholic. And if you're living with, or the alcoholic in your life is still drinking, it's all right. You don't have to be ashamed of loving them. You don't have to like the way they're living. But you don't have to deny yourself loving them, or deny them your love. We forget that behind sickness that was so visible to us, there's a human being that feels and hurts. And the further we get into this illness, the less we can talk about our pain or what we wish we could do or how we regret what we have done. Anyhow, Buck and I were married and two children were born to us. And then we moved to South Carolina, went into business for ourselves, and were very successful. And at that time, Buck had enough money to join everything, and he wanted to join and go where he wanted to go, and I was willing for him to go because it made me important to run our business, and I ran it when he wasn't there. That shows you where my self-confidence and self-esteem was, that running a small business gave me a sense of importance. But at any rate, that business and a lot of others got drunk up. Those of you who aren't from the South don't know that expression, but it means drunk up. Buck was gone on a drunk. I didn't know where he was. I hadn't heard from him. No, I'd heard of him. People would call me up and say, Virginia, I thought you ought to know I saw Buck's car at the Red Rose Motel. Or I saw Buck's car and I wanted to wave to him, but it was somebody else driving. Now, there's a special corner in hell for people like that, because they never gave you anything to encourage you or give you hope or give you ease. They just gave you more garbage to deal with. And you'd throw their comments in that pile of the unknown, and the unknown has no limits. You can plant it like a garden full of whatever you want to plant it. And it depends on your attitude and your state of mind what you plant in the unknown. You can plant hopelessness and despair and hate and anger, or you can plant it with hope and acceptance and love. We decided to come back to Charlotte, or I decided, because Buck had been on a drunk, and I couldn't get a job in this small town where we lived, and I wasn't very employable either, because you see, if somebody told me Buck was at Papa Nash's at Myrtle Beach, I had to come and see if he was. And I'd leave home with a screwdriver and a hammer and a wrench. And when I found his car, I was going to open the hood and I was going to fix it. That's what he got. And sometimes I'd find his car and I couldn't go through with it. Now, you talk about failure is when you set out to do something dirty and you can't go through with it. That is failure. Understandable, you set out to be CEO of a country and a company and don't make it. I don't know what's the matter with my mouth. Buck, don't shut up. I heard him. When I said, I don't know what's the matter with my mouth. Forgot where I was again. I want you to know I'm not long out of the hospital. You're not supposed to laugh. You're supposed to go, aww. My family does every time I pull that. Mother, that was 10 years ago. But you hold on to what you ever hold on to, don't you? So I came to Charlotte, and I found a place to live for the girls and I, and I found work. And I went back to load it. Now, I remember when I rented the place, I didn't speak directly to where my husband was or the father of the children was. It was rather evasive. You know how you don't allow people in enough to ask a question? I didn't let her in enough to ask me any questions. But when I went back to load up some furniture and came back, I showed up with two men. Buck and his brother, who had the truck, was moving the furniture. I know that woman thought, what have I rented to? And I thought everything was going to be fine. And I don't know if that's hope or not, but I spent a lot of years of thinking, it'll be better. This is the last time. It won't happen again. And I spent years of thinking, he doesn't love me. He doesn't love me. And I know when I was loading up, getting ready to come back to Charlotte, he drove up. And he came in and he said, I'm not leaving here to leave you. And I said, I told him I was not leaving there to leave him. And he asked if we had a place to go, and I said yes. And he said, I'll go with you. And I thought, he still loves us. It wasn't until he got into AA I found out that he didn't have any place else to go. But you see, that's all right. The feeling or the thought that he loved me sustained me. If I had known the truth, I would have been angry, angry, angry. So when something makes you feel good or gives you happiness or something is said that encourages you, don't investigate it. Just use it. Enjoy it. Don't take it apart. Some time rocked on and the same old things happened, you know. I don't have to go into all of the reasons and all the things that happened at our house. You know, living with an active alcoholic is like being out in a small boat fishing. Have you ever been out in a small boat? You don't stand there stiff-legged. You keep your knees. You're ready for any eventuality. Wind, another boat, a snag in the water. You're prepared. And he got sober in AA, and I still prepared. Still prepared. Still prepared. I remember the Monday came, and he said, and I had thought about it all afternoon, where I didn't know where he was going. He says that he told me, I don't remember. But I remember thinking, I'm still sitting here running this lousy business. Because you see, at that time, I thought when he went on these drunks, he was having fun. I knew nothing about the obsession. I knew nothing about the addiction. I knew nothing about the compulsion. He was having fun. He chose to go and do the things he did, and I'm still running this business. And I thought, well, I'm going too. I'm your wife. I have a right to go. I want to meet these people you're with. So he came in and he said, I'll see you about 9:30 or 10. And I stood up and I said, well, I'm going too. And I was ready. I was ready. And he said, all right, come on. I could have killed him. If you want to read the Riot Act to somebody and don't get the opportunity, that's self-destruct. You just kills you. So we went out and got in the car. Well, one of the strongest things I think for those of us like me is that we don't want you to know that we don't know. And we'll play a lot of games. Oh, was it cold in the mountains? Well, I don't know. I wasn't in the mountains. Was it hot at the beach? Well, I don't know. Where have you been? You know. So we got in the car, and I don't know where we're going, but I can't ask him because then he'll know I don't know. So we drove across town, and we walked into this building, and he pointed to a stairwell, and he said, they meet down there. I didn't know who they were, but you know I wasn't going to ask him. So I went downstairs, and I stood at the back of the room, and I was talking with another lady, and after a little bit, several people were seated, and I was very fortunate. I came into an Al-Anon group that had men and women and virtually every relationship to an alcoholic can be. And one of the men turned and said, won't you ladies join us? And we went and were seated. I'm sure they opened, as they always do. I don't remember that. All I know is when they said, our program tonight is Ann. And this lady I've been talking to got up. And she shared. And I felt so guilty. because she had married at a very, very, very young age, and her husband had taken her to California, and she got pregnant, and he abandoned her. She had no education and no skills, and she would knit a sweater for you if you'd buy the yarn for $5, or she'd make you a dress if you'd buy the material and the pattern for $5. And that's how she supported herself and her child. And I felt so guilty, because I could go in and apply for work. I didn't have much education, but I had some. And I was attracted. It was more than just he wasn't going to go where I couldn't go. I was attracted. Now, Anne was not a member of that group, and she thought I was. And because I was talking to her, the members of that group thought I had come to the meeting with her. So they didn't give me the newcomer welcome. If you want to give the newcomer welcome, stick to our purpose and nothing else. It will attract people. They won't even know why they're attracted, but it'll hit a chord in here that they will respond to. And that's what I responded to. And I've been coming to meetings ever since. And that's been a while ago. You know, we talk about years in the program and all. It's one day at a time. And my important thing for me to remember is to keep my head and my feet in the same place. And if I can't keep my feet where my head is, then take my feet where my head is, because I'm not doing justice to either one. But at any rate, I started going to Al-Anon, and they said we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. And I thought, of course I'm powerless over alcohol. I've been a failure all my life. And it took me a long time to realize that powerlessness in the first step is not failure, it's truth. I'm not supposed to have power over anybody else or anything else. We have influence. We can influence people, but power over them, no. And my life is unmanageable now, yes. And it started dating back, and then the longer I was in the program, further back and further back and further back. It's like the person that comes into the program and said, oh, I should have been here 6 months ago. You can figure they should have been here 6 years ago, but they'll find that out, you know. So I admitted that I was powerless over time and place and circumstance, and my life was unmanageable. I was powerless over myself, too. The greatest evil in my life is me. What goes on between my ears is the greatest evil in my life. But where else do you go after you make this admission? You're still living and breathing and feeling. Where else to go but on to the second? Came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I think that's the second, isn't it? My mind isn't good. I'm not long out of the hospital. I came to the meetings, and I'm of the old school. I awakened, and I came to believe. And first of all, which is not uncommon, I came to believe in you, and that's healthy. But when I allowed that belief in you to become, made me overly dependent on you, that was unhealthy. I expected you to give me answers to my problems. I expected you to really define my problem because I couldn't. And that is not healthy. And then I had realized I had to come to believe in a power greater than myself. And if it's greater than myself, that power is greater than you. And it's unfair for me to put that burden of me on you. And the third step says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. Made a decision. Oh, decisions are hard. You go to a buffet, how hard it is to choose what you want. And these decisions have nothing to do with anything except the most important thing, our very lives. You know, there are a lot of walking dead. They're dead inside. They have zombie eyes, but they're still walking around. And you wonder what pain and what hurt they have experienced that they are so dead inside. But then you meet people with lively eyes, and you can see the windows through the windows of their soul. And how hopeful that is. How wonderful that is. Turn a decision, turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, not just over to Him. There's a difference me getting your car and I've put myself in your care while you're driving, but entirely different when I turn myself over to you entirely. God didn't give us a mind or a conscience not to use them. And then 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And if you're having trouble with taking an inventory, I have 2 things to suggest. Find somebody in meetings or elsewhere that you can't stand. You hate their guts. Take their inventory, you'll do a good job. Then put your name up top. But we've been taking inventory for a long time, but we didn't recognize that that was inventory taking. We called it something else, pointing out the better way, reminding you, never applying it to ourselves, of course. And 5 says, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. If you notice so far and through the rest of them, it's all in the past tense. Perhaps you did as I did for a while, because I heard them and I read them and all in the past tense. I slipped into believing I had done them. And I had to bring them into the present as they apply to me. Because you know, and if you don't know, ask me after the meeting, I'll tell you why they're in the past tense. There was a lady that I loved very dearly, and she was a lady of color, and she was born on a farm, and she had no education. She was a lovely woman, and she used to say, the doctor done told me that I can't contain enough vitamin C from day to day. I have to have a source of every day. She said, and my soul can't contain Al-Anon from day to day. I have to have a source every day. Isn't that beautiful? And if you knew her, she was beautiful. She was a beautiful woman. Where was I, Buck? I lost my way. admitted to God. I said to my sponsor at that time, why do I have to admit to God? You told me He knows me better than myself. And her common answer to me was always, well, think about it. Oh, why couldn't she just give me the answer? And then I realized that none of this is for God's benefit. It's for my benefit. An exercise in self-discipline. An excursion into honesty. A willingness to look. A willingness to tell it. Not just think it, but hear it. And to looking into another set of eyes and knowing they're hearing it too. And the lady I first asked to hear my 5th step, her eyebrows went up in her hair and she backed off and I backed off. Now, I either wasn't ready or I had chosen the wrong person. And I watched this other lady and I watched her and I watched her and I went to her and I asked her. And she said yes, and I went to her house and we spent an afternoon and I would share with her. And when I'd reach a point that I was crying or unable to go on, she would share with me. I found nothing but acceptance. I found, and some of you are going to say, oh, salvation. And it's in the literature if you look for it. I'm not going to tell you where. Read, you'll find it. Salvation means to come home. And she gave me a sense of coming home, of being accepted. No condemnation, no judgment. Just listening and sharing with me in a loving way. The exact nature of our wrongs. I don't think what I did was the problem. What motivated me to do what I did. And when I came in, Al-Anon didn't have a 12 and 12. And I used the AA 12 and 12. And of all the literature I've read, the most thing that has made the greatest impact on me was step 4 in the AA 12 and 12, where I joined the human race. because it talks about our God-given instincts for love and acceptance and security. And God gives me an instinct. He gives me the right to pursue it. And it goes on to say we can pursue it in a healthy way, and that's good. But if we pursue it in an unhealthy way, it'll warp our lives and the lives of those around us. And I thought, that's it. That's it. No one sets out to warp somebody else's life. I certainly didn't. But we do it in our sickness, in our unhealthy thinking. In our unhealthy thinking. Sanity, healthy thinking. Insane? Yes, we have been. Defects of character are those seven deadlies for me. They're like seven puppy dogs. You ever had seven puppy dogs? When I've got my program and I'm doing good, they're over here on the floor next to the wall sleeping. Just, you know, cute little puppy dogs. But you let one of them start barking, all seven do. I have never found one thing in the nature of a wrong that I could apply just one thing to. And what are those? Pride and lust. Oh, you're thinking sex. Lust means wanting inordinately what we don't have and think we should. And that has to do with money and position and everything else. Other people's popularity, other people's serenity, other people's success. Pride and lust and anger. Anger. Oh, anger. I can't stand here, and you know I don't have to, and say anger has left me. It has not. I was talking to somebody earlier, I believe it was Tom, and we were talking about we have to remember, we have to not just read it and say it, we have to remember that it says we aren't perfect. We just strive for progress. It's a journey. We have to remember that so we get our foot off our own necks and our other foot on somebody else's. These defects of character can lead to every single thing in my life that I have looked back on and said, oh, how could I? But you know, I don't know if I'm practicing deceit for myself or what, but I have to feel there's been some change. I wouldn't look back on those things and think, oh, how could I? Because when I did them, I didn't think, how could I? I just didn't think about it. So there's got to be a change to see them in a different light. Six says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. It's in God's time. It's in God's time they're removed, not mine. And of course, I didn't like that. As soon as I recognized a defect, I want it removed. I can remember going to a lady to talk to her about, I don't even remember what now, but I was in bad shape. And her husband, who I knew also, came in and he said, oh, I'm sorry. And I said, oh, go sit down. And he went and sat down over there, and she and I were sitting here talking, and I was telling her how I was feeling, and she said, Virginia, I don't know. And he spoke up, and he said, well, mind if I say something? And I said, of course not. What? And he said, what chapter of the Red Ring Club do you belong? I said, what are you talking about, Red Ring Club? Sounds to me like you've been sitting on the pity potty a long time. Well. But my head knew the antidote for self-pity. My heart didn't. Gratitude is the antidote, is one of the antidotes for self-pity. So I started making a list, all those corny lists. I thought that was the corniest thing when I got here. Hear about taking these lists. Thank God for dirty dishes means we have food to eat. Thank God that I'm clothed but I still have dirty laundry. It means I have more than one outfit. Thank God for a roof over my head. Thank God for sobriety, physical sobriety. Thank God, thank God, thank God. And I'm not smart enough to do two things at once. I can't even chew gum and walk. So I can't feel sorry for myself if I'm concentrating on what I have to be grateful for. And you heard me say it right, what I have to be grateful for. I need to make the list because I'm not always grateful for those things. And if they're written down and I see them, it will remind me. And eventually they may become a part of my thinking, my mental list of gratitude. Just like the steps become a part of our pattern for life. Only through experience. People that go, well, I'm not going to get into that. It's none of my business. But entirely ready to have God remove them. And then humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Humbly means honestly. I don't know about you, and I don't choose to make a comment about you. But I do not deserve the right to be here, clothed and fed, money in my pocket. This program, I mean, it goes on and on and on. The fact that I'm able to stand up here, because it wasn't that long ago, I was in rehab, not for drinking, physical rehab. I had learned to walk again. I should not, but I'm here. And it isn't for your benefit that I am here. I'm making a payment on my insurance by being here. Do I believe what I'm saying? Am I honest in what I'm saying? Am I dedicated to this way of life? Am I continuing to seek it? Yes. Yes. You know, this morning I got down on my knees and I was praying, and I don't often get down on my knees because it's hard for me to get up. But I was down on my knees and I prayed the prayer that I heard this man talk about in his hometown, a small town. There was a youngster that was very badly crippled, but every morning he would see him going to church. And finally he approached him and he said, "Jimmy, you have such a marvelous attitude and you're always happy and all." I said, "What do you pray for at church?" And he said, "I don't pray for anything." He said, I go in and I get down and I say, "God, it's Jimmy." So I said, "God, it's Virginia." And then I asked him to put the thoughts in my mind and the words in my mouth that someone needed to hear, fully aware I may be the only one needs to hear them. You know, I've been sharing sometimes and it would be like, and I think, that's right. That's the truth. That's right. That's the answer. That's right. Humbly, honestly. Honestly ask him. People argue about shortcomings and defects of character. Okay, you're barefooted and you're walking down there on the beach and you cut one foot on a shell and another on a piece of glass. Don't you still have two cut feet? Shortcomings and defects of character will destroy us. They have controlled us too long. And if unattended, they will destroy us. And then made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. In this step, you're just making the list. And I think we need to put ourselves on the list. It's kind of detaching from ourselves and looking at the list because we have harmed ourselves immeasurably. Immeasurably. I put my husband on that list. I had harmed him immeasurably. Our daughters grew up in active alcoholism. As a result, they're workaholics. They do more than they need to do for everyone. Where is she? But I know she marches to the drummer that she hears. And she has to do that. And then it says, may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And I'm another in regards to some amends. I remember a man came to me and he was talking one time about having fathered a child, and he was going to go back. This child was about college age now, and he figured, and he was going to go back and make sure that he had been successful financially, and he was going to go back and make sure this woman, this daughter of his, had money for college and so forth and so on. I said, how dare you ease your guilty conscience at her expense? What do you mean? You don't know what she's grown up knowing. You don't know what's been told. If you haven't cared before now, why bother? And if you want to do something for her, go to hire an attorney. An attorney will rig up some story about a trust or an insurance policy or something and get money in her hands. It tells us to do things for others and not be identified. The glory comes in the identification that we've done it. There is no glory. It's anonymity belongs to a lot in many, many things. Made a list of all the people and go to face them. There's one lady here, and I don't see her. I don't see her. I'm sure she's here, though, because she's so loving and forgiving. And she again reminded me this weekend that she had long since forgiven me when my mouth got in motion before my mind was in gear. And I said things I shouldn't have said. It's hard to accept sometimes, isn't it? The love and forgiveness of other people. 10 says we continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong. People say, I say, why do you need a fourth step if you're not going to do anything but the 10th? What are you continuing? There are those that say you take the first 9 steps and throw them away. You've done them. But then what are you continuing in 10? What are you maintaining in 11? What are you sharing in 12? Our experience comes from our experience. What would I have to share on a 12-step call if I threw out the memories of and the experience of that have been mine? They're sure not going to identify with the program. I didn't when I first got here. I just relished being with sober people, and people were laughing. Of course, I remember that first night with Ann that I thought she was crazy telling all the stuff she was telling. I'd never do that. I never met Ann again. It's sufficient that she was in one room one night to open the door for me. Physical proximity is not the answer, always. I found out later that she had educated herself and had a wonderful job working for a car dealership, and that's a hard set of books to keep for you that don't know. And she was living a good life in Florida. I shall never forget Ann from the Hawthorne Group in Charlotte, North Carolina. Then it says that we sought. It means I seek. Sought through prayer and meditation. That's how. What? Knowledge of God's will for me and the power to God to carry that out. That's the program right there. If we stop seeking, we won't find anything. We'll be stuck on the road in this journey of life wherever we happen to be. We'll shortchange ourselves and those around us. But it's God as I understand Him and as you understand Him. And that can be different as it can be. But if it gives me peace and it gives you peace, it's sufficient. Now, you know I was in the elevator for a while, and so I don't know what time I started. So, Jim, you have to give me a signal. Am I all right? Time wise? Okay. Well, stand up and holler if I get, because I can stop any time you'd think I was through, you know. Says the 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Practice means to teach myself through repetition. A fine violin player, a fine musician, a fine athlete, a fine person in any realm, they've practiced. It's only through practice that we can achieve. And the achievement is within ourselves, where we have peace, where we find it possible to love and love without restriction. Well, she's not exactly like I think she should be, you know. Somehow in my childhood, I thought you learned to like people before you loved them. And when I came in and I saw some people and I thought, because they were talking about learning to love, how can I love him? God, I can't stand him. And that's when I started learning that you can love without liking. And even if it's a family member, you don't have to like the way they act. But you can love them. You can love them. The hard part is the last, isn't it? To practice these principles in all of our affairs. I think my time is about up. It really doesn't matter if it is or it isn't. I think it's important that we're all together here today on a Saturday. I can remember dreading Saturdays. Dreading them. And a crowd on Saturday meant there was going to be a fight sooner or later. And you better know where the back door was, because the police were going to come. We always went to the finest places, you know. Where's Jan? We went to Red Barn. I want to close. I want to thank you again. I want to thank you again for being here this morning. So often the Al-Anon meeting is not well attended. And I say to my AA friends two things. One, when you go on a 12-step call, what do you tell the family is for them? And the other is, why don't you attend Al-Anon meetings at conventions? You might better understand the non-alcoholics in your life. You might be very grateful for them if you hear people like me. A longtime member of AA said, AA stands for Alcoholics Anonymous, absolutely. But he said to me, it also stands for the afflicted and the affected. The lines I want to close with were written by someone else. Oh, horrors, not conference approved literature. As though God gives wisdom only to people like us. I know not what the future holds of marvel or surprise. I'm assured alone that life and death God's mercy underlies. And if my heart and flesh are weak to bear an untried pain, the bruised reed God will not break but strengthen and sustain. No offering of my own I have, no works my faith to prove. I can but give the gift he gave and plead his love for love. I know not where God's islands lift their fronded palms in air. I only know I cannot drift beyond his love and care. And if my hopes are, if my faith is vain and my hopes betray, pray for me that I may find a safer way. And thou, O Lord, who knows thy creatures as they be, forgive me if too close I lean my human heart to thee. Thank you very much.
Virginia, this is a gift from the Fellowship by the Sea Committee. Thank you for a beautiful job.
I know y'all dying to see what it is. Uh-huh. Because I am. When they get so often at conventions, somebody will get, you know, be a lovely presentation like this, and they don't open it. And I'm like, burn, what is it? Oh, it's the Serenity Prayer. Isn't that nice?
We'll come down and close with the Lord's Prayer.